Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Rob Stone. 20 years of combination experience. From a young age, Rob always wanted to be a firefighter with his uncle, having served with Dallas Fire Department in Texas. With knowing what he wanted in life, Rob joined as a volunteer with Frisco Fire Department, where he surrounded himself with go-getters who set the tone for him with culture, training, and knowing the job. Rob is also a big proponent towards mental health, as he openly discussed his own struggles and how having the right individuals in your corner allows you to rise above adversity. My favorite quote from the interview with Rob is, "This job has a shelf life." With that, I present Mr. Rob Stone.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Rob Stone. Live in Lewisville, Texas. Got in the fire service. Something I always wanted to do when I was younger. My uncle was a Dallas fireman, and it was something I was ate up with, like a lot of people as a kid. Went to college first, rodeoed for quite a few years and chased that dream, had some fun, and went to college first, finished college, got a business degree. I just wanted something general, but I knew it was not what I was cut out to do. I knew I wanted to be a fireman, sit in an office. Just not for me. So got out of school, started volunteering in with the Frisco Fire Department. Man, they're big now, probably like 14 stations. And when I was there, it was just three stations, and had a Class A burn building, worked with a bunch of, hard chargers, aggressive guys. We trained a lot. It really, a bunch of the guys now are all chiefs, but man, we trained a lot, and really kind of set the tone for my career. Went to fire academy and EMT school, paramedic school. Kind of back in the day down here, you had to be a paramedic to get, hired on anywhere, with not that many people, recruiting issues, they're kind of lowering that level of the EMT. But from there, I got hired with a Coppell Fire Department. I was there for 15 years. Great organization, great people, love my time there. Then I started working part-time where I'm at now, at Parker County ESD1. And man, realized that this is what I've been looking for. The culture there, the victim first mindset. We first respond on the EMT level, but we don't run our EMS. Parker County Hospital District does that, and man, they are jam up. So it's a good marriage. We're fire first, rescue first. Been there about 3 years now, and got hired on as a driver, and recently promoted to lieutenant. But it's been a great journey, and just something I always wanted to do, something bigger than myself.
My first question after hearing your intro, was it a hard decision after 15 years to leave an organization? Because that's time vested right there.
It was tough, but we'll speak on that stuff later or whenever you want to get to it. But man, I had some stuff going on in my life. I got in a kind of a bad place, and I needed to press a reset button, and it was best for me to step away. I teach at North Central Texas College, a junior college, fire academy. I'm faculty there. And man, I was just going to focus on the school, focus on one thing. I was burnt out, not really in a good place. And so it was best for me to press a reset button and get refocused on myself, because I neglected that, And so luckily the retirements match. They're two different ones. But, I took a little bit of a break, just taught at the college, and then started working part-time in Parker County. And then I was like, man, reignited everything, kind of got the fire back, and okay. I was in a much better place.
Okay. With that being said, upon entering your career fire service world at your first department, you always said when you volunteered at Frisco, you surrounded yourself with hard chargers. Was it the same when you got into the career side, or kind of have to find those individuals?
When I first got in, in Coppell, I had to kind of find those individuals. There's a bunch of guys there that are hard chargers and stuff, but it's just, It's just different at a bigger city fire department. You know, not everybody's doesn't really look at everything the same way, and maybe not as much of a hard charger as you. So, that definitely singled me out a little bit, because very passionate, very, vocal earlier on in my career, just cared a lot. And so definitely had to kind of find those people that looked at things the same way, and kind of marry myself to them and kind of stick together and try to change the culture, and they're, I can't speak highly enough about them. I mean, they're really good at what they do, and they got a bunch of hard chargers there, and it's like turning an aircraft carrier, though. It just takes time. And so definitely, surrounded myself. I joined the Fools early on, and surrounded myself by like-minded individuals and a lot of outside trainings and things like that. So I was very involved, still am very involved outside the fire, my department and too. So yeah, I think you gotta surround yourself with like-minded individuals that like to get after it.
Okay. No, I can respect that. What's your advice with, 'cause I struggle with this. Like, I understand you're gonna find individuals in your organizations throughout the country that aren't as into the job as you would like, but I find the issue I have with it is when the individual's just totally not engaged at all. Like, they're just there. Like, that's where I have an issue with it.
I couldn't agree enough. I've heard it said, one of my captains said, he's, man, like, some people come to work operating on hope and luck, and that's hoping they don't catch a call, and lucky enough somebody bails them out if they do, and I think that's a, it's tough. You got to have buy-in, and I think you just got to lead by example. And I didn't always handle it the best early on. You'll call people out and stuff, but I think you got to bring people along, and involve them, and maybe task them with teaching something and be like, hey, next shift, you're gonna be covering this, and I think it's a personal choice at the end of the day, and not everybody's as into it. But the way I look at that thing is, mediocrity is not a standard, just being okay at your job and not caring, mediocrity, I hate the term good enough, mediocrity hovers just right above good enough, and we got to be better than that. And so I think, the way you do it is just setting an example, being consistent, and just, continuously caring, and just trying to bring those people along, making sure they understand the mission and why we're here, some people, never going to buy in, they're just there for a paycheck, there for a schedule, there for insurance. But I do think accountability is a big issue, or a big thing. I think, we talked about it, speak on that, but where I'm at, we have performance-based standards. So it's kind of hard to slip through the cracks. Everybody's got to meet, we got an FTO process and an FTO exit test that's timed, and it's several evolutions from pulling hose to, bunking out at the rig, pulling hose, several, 2.5, 1.75 inch, extended lay, throwing ladders, doing all that. And it's all timed, and you have to do everything right. And, you can fail it. I failed a couple sections the first time and had to redo it. And, it's not easy, but it standardizes things. And so, it's not just the mentality of, oh, it's, the fair, it's fair, everybody's got to be held to a standard. And I know for us, way I always said it is, the state fair comes to town in October and it leaves, so I think everybody's got to have accountability and a standard. And I, when I went to Parker County, having those performance-based standards just, it puts everybody on the same page. We're all doing things the same way, and you have to meet that standard. And I think standards are a big thing, and that has to come from the top, and leadership.
Right. That's right. Okay. Well, can you tell us about Parker ESD, the size, population, things of that nature about your department?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Parker County ESD1. We're Weatherford is the county seat. We're outside of Fort Worth. We cover 300 and I think 25 square miles. With we're opening our eighth station this coming in about 2 weeks. We run 7 engines, 1 ladder truck, 2 rescues, 2 fully staffed tankers. So we got a mix of everything. You know, you got your towns, your cities, you know, residential neighborhoods, and then you got your, you know, county areas, which, you know, could be anything from single wides, double wides to, you know, big ranch houses. You know, in my district, I've got multi-million dollar homes, and then I've got, you know, lower income, you know, people just barely getting by. So we've got a big mix of you know, everything. We got, you know, get lots of wildland fires, grass fires. We deal with that too. You know, and so it's one of the fastest growing counties in the state. And so you know, we'll probably have 2 more stations right behind it, 'cause it's just hard to keep up. But you know, water supply is an issue for us. You know, that's why we run 2 staff tankers. We're big on the booster backup. You know, we have to do that. And you're next due on some of the areas. You know, you could be 10 minutes out. I mean, you get there by yourself. You know, you have to make a difference, you know, and you have to get off the rig and make things happen, because there's nobody coming for a little while, you know. And so it's a good mix, you know. And I mean, the way ESDs work, I know, you know, it's bigger down here, and kind of, you know, it's basically a bunch of smaller towns that can't really afford to have to sustain a full-time fire department, that, you know, the city just doesn't have enough money to do that. So they contract with us, and so we do that. And Parker County ESD1 is, you know, it was basically, you know, several a bunch of volunteer fire departments that came together and became paid and staffed. And so it's a, you know, the county's a different animal, you know, and it's just different than in the city. You know, we don't have 3 or 4 engines, 2 trucks on scene, you know, a chief and a medic company, and you know, and you know, 8, 10 minutes. We just don't have that. You know, our first alarm assignment's 3 engines, a tanker, and a chief, you know. And so that's all we're getting right off the bat, unless we call for more.
Okay. And what's your minimum staffing on each apparatus?
Three on each engine. Three on each engine. The truck has 3 right now. You know, we're going to 4 for the truck. And the tankers are just 1 people, and the rescue, we kind of cross-staff that with part-timers. We have people that work part-time. You know, they usually work other departments, and so we call them reserve personnel, and they'll usually staff the rescues. And sometimes there may be you know, 2 people on there, maybe just 1 that gets that apparatus to the, you know, gets the rescue to the scene. And so but minimum of 3 on each engine, and on the truck. We
Is
got
the
two battalion chiefs. Just put a second battalion in,
okay.
and so yeah, it's we're spread out.
Is the rescue an ambulance or an actual rescue truck?
It's an actual rescue, and it's not like a walk-in rescue, but
Right.
it's a rescue truck. And you know, we're expanding our rescue capabilities. You know, from everything from, you know, rope rescue to hazmat to swift water. You know, the county has some spec ops teams, you know, but it's kind of, you know, still developing. So you know, we're kind of trying to become, you know, self-sufficient and add to what the county has, and be kind of a regional response as well. So it's just, you know, right now we're just kind of working to getting everybody trained up to that level. You know, trained up to the rescue level, and especially at the stations that have the 2 rescues, you know, trying to make sure that everybody's well versed in what, you know, those rescues, their capabilities are.
Okay. All right. So my first official question in a way to you is, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
You know, I think sometimes aggressive gets a negative connotation. You know, I think aggressive is safe. You know, you got to take the fight to the enemy. You know, you can't go into a fight flat-footed, you know, standing there. You know, if you get punched in the face, you know, while you're flat-footed, you're going to get knocked down. So I think you've got to take the fight to the enemy. You know, sometimes people will label, you know, departments that are aggressive as cowboys, you know, and you'll hear that term. And you know, we're very aggressive. We operate in an offensive manner until we have to, operate in a defensive manner. It's victims first, fire first. Charlie Dahl, Chief Dahl, worked for us and recently went to Haltom City, and he was instrumental in a lot of the way we operate. And he said, he goes, I'm going to a fight, and I don't like a fair fight, and so. I think it's taking that fight to the enemy. You can correct course if you're moving forward, but it's a lot harder to correct course if you're just standing there, waiting to see what happens, And so I think you have to be aggressive. We're firefighters, we're not fire stand there, being aggressive is what's best for the victims, the people we serve. That's what they expect. They expect us to aggressively solve their problems and not just pull up and, get off the truck and not know what we're doing. When that parking brake sets, they want people that are coming for them. And I think the only way you do that is with an aggressive mindset and aggressive culture. Aggressive fire ops, aggressive search, getting in there and occupying that space. And we've all been on fires that, you're pretty much defensive when you get there. But and there's, sometimes you may have to go offensive, go defensive for a second, go back offensive. But we are all we operate, default aggressive, in an offensive mindset all the time until proven otherwise. And I know our policies and procedures, we have SOGs, guidelines. They really empower people to make their decisions, especially officers, and as long as it kind of is, your decision, even if it's wrong, was in the best interest of, the people we serve. And kind of so I think I think that has an aggressive, culture and aggressive mindset has to be supported at all levels. But yeah, I think, aggressive, like I said at the beginning, is safe. I think we're, if we're taking that fight to the enemy, we stand a lot better chance of winning and controlling what's going on. I mean, we, and we have to kind of control that and, dictate the outcome. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I love your answer. I have no, everything was spot on that one. Regarding realistic training on a small budget, I'm not sure what EST's budget is, but I can tell, or I'm just envisioning, like, you guys cover a very large portion of the county with stations placed in strategic areas. What kind of training do you Can you guys bring for your members? You know what I mean? Because I'm not sure if you have a training grounds area or anything like
Actually,
that.
actually we do, man. And our we don't have like a city council. We have an ESD board, and they're fully, we just built a state-of-the-art 5-story class A burn building. We have air entrainment prop. We have a single wide prop. It's basically, I forget how many acres it is. It's like 12 acres, and it's basically like a little training complex. And it's just now being finished up, and it's really modeled after like the, is it FDTN or F,
FTTN,
yeah, FDTN. It's really modeled after that. And class A. So we are very fortunate. And and the way they do it is we'll cover other stations. They usually two apparatus at a time will go out there, and then we'll move people around. But we train regularly. We train regularly, live burns regularly. Get out there if you just want to go out there as a company and go force doors. The chiefs are real supportive, the battalion chiefs of, making that happen. So we are blessed, we are blessed with a, a state-of-the-art regional training center. And then I think, we are big on company level training. I can't, the culture at ESD One is like nothing I've ever been around. It's what you hear people talk about at conferences, is what you've, read about in books. It's like we have that. And I mean, every morning, We do mask up drills, mask up with our gloves on. When we put on our air packs and check our air packs, we actually put them on our backs, and as a crew, and that's across the board, that's kind of what's expected. And then, company level training at the station, getting creative and making things happen there. So, we're expected to train at a minimum, we do 4896, and so you're expected to do an hour of training, at minimum an hour of training at both days, I can tell you across the board that it's more than that. The training culture there, the preparedness and being good at your job, we don't really have a mission statement. Chief Watson wrote an ethos. We have an ethos for mission success, and it basically spells everything out in there is what's expected of you. And it speaks about, in part of it, about training, daily preparedness, mentally, physically, tactically. And so it's, the culture, the training culture there is like I've never seen it. Guys don't just, it's not something you just have to go do, it's something you want to do and something that's encouraged and expected, So, yeah, they're fixing to finish up our training tower. I'll send you a picture of it when we're done and everything, but it is, man, it's legit.
Okay. So my next question for you will be Capel, Fire Department. And then, you were there for 15 years. So my question to you was, have you always wanted to be a company officer, or was that just something that as time went on, it just happened?
It just, my goal was to retire as a company officer, at the end of the day. I knew, that's was what I wanted to do. But it wasn't something I was like, excuse me, I was chasing, that I had to have a title or something, definitely not a title guy. It's still weird when people call me LT or Lieutenant. I've always just been Stone, and it's like, I'm definitely not about titles and things. But I just feel with, I just felt with my time and, everything that, I had what it takes to, be a good company officer and be there for others. And so, I'm not gonna lie, leaving the engineer position, that's it, you always hear people say it's the best job in the world, and
I am one of them.
yeah, man, it is, it is the best job in the world. And but I wanted to be challenged. I wanted to have more formal responsibility and be challenged in a different way. And so, definitely not a title seeker. And I think that's all it is a title. But it gives you an opportunity to lead in a different way, that's the thing about leadership too. It's like nobody needs permission to lead. You can lead wherever you're at, and I'm big on empowerment. It's the way with my crew, it's a democracy. It's not a dictatorship. I make the, at the end of the day, the buck stops with me, but man, the best ideas win, I want thinking firefighters. I want everybody to bring something to the table, and if their idea is better than mine, that's what we're doing. I mean, no argument about it. I will never be that guy that says, because I said so, you need to do this because I said so. I think when you do that, you've got a big bag of nothing. I mean, when you're just, basing what you want somebody to do something for, the reason is because you said so. People want to know why they're doing things, it's and understand so they can better support the mission. And so, I think, I'm looking forward to the assignment. Like I said, it's, still relatively new to me. I also worked part-time for 8 years. It's Denton County ESD1. It was Argyle Fire District. And man, there was just two of us. We had an engine, a brush, and a medic sitting there. And so had some county experience. But it developed me out there to be a good firefighter, a good medic. I would, by default, be the one that got in the right front seat, and I've had some experience, stepping up and things like that. So yeah, like I guess, long answer to a short question, like I said, it's just it ultimately was a goal, but I was going to be totally good if I didn't get the spot, as an engineer. It wasn't going to affect me or one way or the other.
Is it kind of wild to think, we're in the year 2024, soon to be 2025, and this is no fault, no shot to any organization out there, because I mean, the fire service across the nation, it's so vast, with the that it's made up mostly of volunteers a lot
Sure.
too. But is it crazy to think that there are still departments operating with like two personnel? Hell, sometimes even just one, just to get a truck out.
It is crazy, and what I've just learned over the years, man, is like, some of these places can't make money, like they can't just go print up money, and it's all about dollars and cents, and they have other areas that they've got to use their funds for their communities. But I think, gosh, a minimum of three, I mean, four, we would all love four, but a minimum of three, I've been on plenty of fires, when I was, at, Argyle, and where it was just two of you pulling up, and, it's like the wild, wild west, and, it's hard to be effective. It's hard to get everything done, it almost, I think, when people see you pull up and there's just two of you, you're trying to do everything, but they're like, what are these guys doing? They're doing the best they can. They're doing what they can with what they got, and and at the end of the day, I think it's dangerous for the guys, but there's plenty of people out there doing it and making it happen, man, my hat's off to them, because that's not an easy task, and so I think it's a something that hopefully, the organizations or, townships or whatever find funding, but to provide a good level of protection, you need to have staffing.
Right. No, I mean, I agree. And like I said, it's not a shot at any way, but there are places that the tax revenue is just not there. And every town, country, or every town, city, municipality, whatever, township, they need fire protection. Like you need that. That's like a non-negotiable. And I understand, a lot of them sometimes will supplement with volunteers, but in this day and age where volunteers can't just stop their actual full-time living wage job and go, "Hey, boss, I'll be back. I gotta answer this call." Like, those days are over.
No, I understand. And out in the county, there's a lot of volunteer departments still where I'm at, and there's just no way they could sustain, sustain anything else. And I've gotten nothing but respect for volunteers, that's one of the most selfless things you could do, but they have full-time jobs and full-time lives, and so, and you know how it is, they got to respond and go get the apparatus and then respond to the call, and that's just, that's just the way they have to do business. But you're 100% right. There's a, fire affects everybody. It doesn't discriminate. Doesn't care if you live out in the middle of the county, and your department's volunteer, or if you're, live in the city and your career paid and well staffed, it's a, we've got to have fire protection. That's the only chance that, the people we serve and that they expect, is to have that, available to them.
Definitely, definitely. Okay, I'm going to transition to you were at Coppell for 15 years,
Yes, sir.
and everybody, as I stated before in plenty of other episodes, life is very important. Ups and downs of life. Everyone's going to go through trials, tribulations, issues, whatever the case may be. What, and I'll let you tell the story, but seeing the light where it was like, man, Parker ESD, like this is it for me. Like I want to be a part of this organization. What led you down that road?
As soon as I got there, I knew that's where I was going to be. Just a little kind of preface, I rode a truck for 13 of my 15 years in Coppell, and it was dedicated and four man, and I'd still ride the ambulance every once in a while, but that just I pride myself on being a good paramedic, and when I get on the ambulance, it was I was going to be the best paramedic. I stay up on my stuff, know my stuff, but man, I just wanted to be a fireman, that's just the cloth I'm cut from, like I said, great organization, I'm not sure if this is the way you want this to go, but yeah, man, 15 years, loved every minute of it, man. Great people, they took such good care of me, but man, life happens, and it was just a lot of years of a lot of stuff. Man, I was always giving to others, just pouring myself out to others, never doing any kind of self-care, things like that, personal life things happen, there's some calls that always stick with you, and stuff like that. It's just the nature of our job, inside, at work and outside of work is just different than anybody else's. And so yeah, man, I just slowly and steadily just kind of started, man, I started getting depressed, and I'm not that kind of person, just kind of feeling, down and out, started not caring, about anything, and man, I'm not, never have been a big drinker or anything, but I started drinking, ridiculously, on my days off, and man, and that was the worst decision I could ever make, 'cause it just made things worse, and I was, kind of one of those silent sufferers, nobody knew. The guys at work, they're like, man, I had no idea. And I'm like, that was by design, when I came in, even I've been doing it long enough that, you didn't talk about those kind of things, you just kind of, you were, you didn't want to be seen as weak, and that's totally changed, which for the good. But yeah, man, I didn't feel like, I needed to reach out. I didn't feel like I knew how to reach out. And so, yeah, man, I got to a dark place, and basically, the way I can sum it up is I didn't care about anything, I didn't care. And man, and Coppell, the guys that started basically a peer support team, Coppell's progressive in everything they do. And man, I was in a kind of a not good place, and they kind of figured it out and knew it, and basically came to my house one day and was like, man, we need to get you some help, and by that point, that was exactly what I needed, because I don't know that I was going to ask for it. And so, I actually went to Illinois to Chief Dan DeGrice's Rosecrans Florian program for, 30 days, and got some help, and it was the best decision I've ever, made. It helped me to understand things I didn't understand, I didn't know how to deal with, and I hadn't dealt with. And when I got back, there's some great organizations around here, support organizations, and shout out to Jennifer Halley and Three for the Love. They're an organization that helps first responders, get the resources they need, and they set me up with some people. I started seeing a therapist, Dr. T, she's in Frisco, and man, she never said one thing that I disagreed with. I mean, it all kind of made sense going through this process. Everything I hadn't understood and, didn't know why it was that way. It all made sense. And I wouldn't change. And so with that being said, I stepped away from Coppell. I was like, man, I've got to get my life straight, and I was just gonna work at the college and do that. And I absolutely love, doing that, man. It's one of the most rewarding things ever. But I missed it. I missed it, and started working part-time at Parker County. But I wouldn't change anything I've gone through. It's made me the person I am today, and it's given me the ability to help others. I'm very involved in our peer support team, very involved in some first responder groups, helping people, sharing my story so that, it may help them so they don't feel like they're alone, and that they can reach out to me, and I'm for sure gonna listen. I'm gonna listen first, and if they want to hear kind of my experiences, and I'm very transparent about it. Everybody knows, what I went through, and kind of like probably like you guys that care, a lot of people, so a lot of people knew what I went through, and it's kind of like some people were like, man, is he ever going to get back in? Is this the end of it? For somebody who cared so much, and is he done with the fire service? And it kind of got refocused on my life, got my life where it needed to be, in a great place, in a great place now. I couldn't be in a better place. And I just kind of almost needed I almost needed a second chance, and I went, kind of to Parker County, just, humble hat in hand, transparent, they hired me, part time, and then, we hired a big group of 20, and, I got hired on full time. But yeah, I am big on, mental health and self care. The fire service is finally, and in general, in society in general, mental health is becoming acceptable to, it's okay to not be okay, and providing resources out there to help people. 'Cause, oh, you know how it is, man. We're type A personalities. We fix things, we fix it ourselves. And, there's a lot of people out there that may be silently struggling and think they're alone. What I realized is, man, I wasn't as special as I thought I was. My story wasn't that unique. There were other people out there. I surrounded myself by people with similar experiences, and I realized, man, I'm not alone. And that's what I want everybody else to know. It's like, man, you are not alone. It doesn't show a sign of weakness. I was told during this whole process, it's okay to not be okay. It's just not okay to stay there, and you have to get, have to get the help. But I enjoy sharing my story. I spoke at a couple first responder conferences, for that Dr. T was putting on for people starting peer support programs, shared my story, and just in hopes that it helps others. You can't keep it if you don't, give it away. So I stay active in that. And, like I said, it was kind of a, there was some uncertainty there for a while. It was kind of a leap of faith, to say, man, I'm going to step back and focus on my life, but man, if I hadn't have done that, nothing, work wasn't going to be better, home life wasn't going to be better. And, at the end of the day, looking back on it, is some of the best decisions and best experiences I've been through. To get through it, you got to go through it. And I just hope, sharing my story, is, makes other people realize that, they're not alone and that people are there for them.
That's a fact. That's a fact. One thing too with firefighters, especially the ones, and I'm going to harp on this one too, like pretty hard, especially the ones that are like truly into the job that want to get better at the job. And by that meaning they go to these conferences, they go to these classes, they travel throughout the country to get that information that they're hungry for, that they want to get better at. But one thing that always happens is I think you fail to realize that whether you're there or not, your organization is going to continue to move without you. And yes, you're going to run calls that are going to affect you in different ways, which then puts, I think it makes the user or the individual put themselves like last in the category, and the fire department becomes priority. And I think that's where the disconnection and the gap comes from. And it's not a bad thing. It's just, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's a thing that we don't know that we're consciously doing because we're so focused on, I want to be good. I want to go to this place, you know, here, there, that, and the other. And you forget to put yourself first, making sure that you're good.
Man, I couldn't agree more. You hit the nail on the head, and I think you've been reading my mail because that was me. Everything you just said, that was me. And you know, it was putting everybody else first. You know, it was all fire all the time. You know, it was almost like putting my family, you know, on the back burner. You know, it was conferences and trainings you know, and all that stuff, which I love, you know, and I still love going to. But I had to learn to kind of, you know, I don't know if setting boundaries is the term for it, but it's okay to miss a conference. It's okay to, you know, to spend time with your family and stuff. Cause I was that hard charger, man. Cause I love this job, man. I love, you know, I want to be good at it. And I love being poured into and poured into other people. And man, I put myself last. And I put everything else last. You know, it was all focused on that. So everything you just said was, you know, describing, you know, how I was, which led me to kind of, you know, burn out and kind of get in a bad place, you know. And you know, and I think you know, if your home life's not good, man, your work life's not going to be good, you know. And if you're not, you know, taking time for yourself, you know, it's there's an art to saying no, you know. You know, it's kind of, I still feel like I am, and I was always a go-to guy, you know, always involved in projects, you know, honor guards, committees, you know, things like that, you know. And it's like, you know, I think for a while people know they can count on you. They know you'll do a good job. They know you'll be all in. So they just kind of keep asking, you know. And you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. But you know, what I learned the hard way is sometimes you got to say no, man. You know, I don't have time for that. My plate's too full. You know, I need to spend time with my family. You know, I need some time, you know, for myself. And you know, because like you said, people listening to this podcast and, you know, going to conferences and stuff, they care. You know, they care.
Exactly.
They are passionate about it, you know, and they are very much students of the game, you know. And and they want to be good. And that's awesome. That's awesome. But you know, you do have to prioritize other things, you know. And that's just something I learned with time and experience, you know. You know, it's, you know, still go to conferences, still involved, you know. It's just I'm not at one every weekend, and I'm not taking, you know, I'll still take some vacation or whatever, you know, if there's a conference I want to go to. But you know, not just gone every weekend, or you know, gone, you know, at work, and then, you know, your family doesn't see you for a week because you're on shift, and then you're at a 4-day conference, you know. And so man, you hit the nail on the head. I think a lot of people can probably relate to what you said.
With me and you, we probably have, we're about close in years of service time. So I want to ask you this question, and it's for the younger generation coming up. And I know whenever somebody starts with that, it's like, oh no, where's he going? But I want to say, I want you to talk about how important and how real firefighter burnout is, because you know, at one point in my career, I worked my career job and two part-time firefighter jobs. It was just
Man.
like go, 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 go. I loved it. I couldn't get enough of it. But there's going to be a point where you're going to get burnt out because all you're doing is really switching t-shirts, wearing a different color gear, but you're doing the same type of work. Rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat.
Yeah, man, I was doing the same thing. You know, like I said, I worked at part-time 8 years, you know, in Argyle while I was working my full-time job in Coppell. So it was fire all the time, or it was fire department all the time. And I worked a lot of shifts, you know. And I felt, you know, I was like, man, I gotta be there. I gotta be there. Well, like you said, the rigs are gonna go out the door whether I'm there or not. You know, the days are gonna go on. And you know, I think you gotta realize that. And I think, you know, I love that you know, kind of preface that, you know, this generation, you know, man. You know, I tell you what, teaching at the Fire Academy has taught me so much more about generations than, you know, our generation was different than our parents' generation. You know, the next generation is going to be different than this generation. And, you know, so I don't look at that as a bad thing. You know, it's, you know, what I've learned with these kids, you know, teaching at the Fire Academy is, man, they'll do anything you ask them. They just want to know why, you know, They just want to know why. And they may have not grown up, mowing their grass or using tools, or grew up on a ranch. You get a little bit of everything in Fire Academy. They may not have grown up that way, but it's not their fault that their parents paid somebody to mow the yard. So you give them a chainsaw and it's totally foreign to them. I know when we first started the Fire Academy, we just kind of assumed people knew and throw them right on event prop, and now we crawl, walk, run. We explain everything. We run them dry. We run them, we got a prop where you just run back and forth on OSB, roll some rafters before we get up on the event prop. I had a kid last semester. I told him to go get me a Phillips head screwdriver, and he's like, "Is that the plus or the minus, sir?" And I'm like, "Two," and I'm like, "Touche." And I did have some fun with it, but that just like it's my job to teach him. He's never been taught that, And instead of just berating him and being, it's just to teach him. So, the generation's definitely different. It's definitely different, but we have to just understand that and accept it. You can't have the good old days syndrome and be like, God, man, I don't get it. This generation, they're hopeless or whatever. They're not hopeless. They just need to be taught. And, and people taught me, and I didn't invent any of this stuff. I mean, everything we're talking about and everything I do at the college, I'm just pouring into them what's been poured into me, and you got to have somebody that'll, take them and teach them, and kind of the days of just, talking about it and then just throwing them straight to the wolves. I mean, there's some value in that every once in a while, but for the most part, the crawl, walk, run, man, and teaching them. So, their generational differences are for sure. I didn't grow up playing a lot of video games or anything like that. And that's just an example. I mean, video games are cool. I grew up outside doing things hands-on, but that's how I grew up, And so, I think with generational differences, you have to understand them, and you have to be accepting and realize that they're different, but that you were different too to your parents, the generation is. So, I think a big thing is just knowing the why. Here's why I want you to do this, and here's why you're doing it, and here's the mission, the overall reason why you're doing it. And man, my experience has been that 99% of the time they buy in, and and they just want to know that.
We kind of hit on wellness and truly being there for one another, because with your circumstances, and you felt that brotherhood when those individuals came to your house and were like, "Hey man, like we've noticed some stuff. Let's get you some help." What's your advice on if you're on the other side of that coin, if you notice that somebody on your crew, like if I was your firefighter and you notice a couple shifts, Danny's been coming in, it's not really the same. Like, what's your advice for individuals that maybe might not know, or maybe like they should start paying attention more, especially company officers?
Yeah, man, I think you hear that all the time. Like I said, when the worst of the worst happens, they're like, "Man, we had no idea. We had no idea." And then they say, "But looking back on it, hindsight, we noticed this, we noticed that, And I think we just need to be more attentive to our people, at every level, the firefighters are going to be closer to the firefighters tend to be, and the company officer's got to be in tune with everybody. But you got to watch your people. I mean, and that's why you exist, is for your people, especially as an officer, you were there for them. And I think if you're noticing those subtle differences, man, it's better to act on that than to not do anything. And I don't mean go blindside them or anything like that. And, you might, it might be something as simple as having, hey, they're, so-and-so is good buddies with so-and-so, maybe, asking him if he'll, just chat with him. And, it's okay to ask. It's just like, "Hey man, I've noticed that, you just kind of seem off a little bit, or is everything good? Is everything good at home, man? Do you need anything?" And, I think that's where it's tough to get some people to open up sometimes, you know, because like what I did, it's like, oh man, it's all good. It's all good. But I think, you know, you don't want to blindside people. You don't want to bombard them. But I think if they know you care and you are concerned and they're, you know, they are going through something and at first they don't want to tell you, that a lot of the times they, you know, hopefully they'll come back to you and circle back around to that and be like, hey man, can I talk to you over here, you know, or hey, can we go grab lunch or something, and you know, and do it like that, you know, every situation's unique, you know, and it's, you know, it's not, people aren't comfortable talking about it, you know. The ones going through it, you know, they're embarrassed. You know, I know I was, you know, feel, maybe feel embarrassed or ashamed. You know, I kind of felt weak, you know, and you know, but my guys knew me and they noticed it, you know, and they noticed it enough that, you know, they came to my house on an off day, you know, and they're my closest of friends, you know, and that was when I was like, all right, man, y'all are right, you know, here's what's going on, you know, you know, so I think, you know, I think you just got to be there for each other and notice those subtle differences, and if you see something, say something, you know, and I'm not saying go tell on them or anything like that, you know, just, you got to figure out how to approach that situation and try to open up those lines of communication. Because, you know, at the end of the day, that's all they're wanting. They just don't know how to go about it a lot of the times, you know, or, you know, there's kind of the stigma. It's like, you know, the firefighter doesn't necessarily want to go tell his company officer, you know, that, you know, right off the bat and be like, hey, boss, I'm, you know, this is going on, you know, in fear of maybe some retribution. But, you know, having a, you know, a fellow firefighter, for example, you know, is probably going to be a good avenue for that, you know. And so, you know, people got to know you care, you know, people got to know your care, and that, you know, you're genuinely there for them, and that your heart's in the right place, and it's only to help them, you know, only to help them.
And before I close that topic out, also when they do come to you, remember, and I always like to harp on this, remember, don't go and tell your best friend like, hey, you wouldn't believe what such and such just told me. Like that's, I think that's where maybe some of the issues where firemen don't want to tell. I mean, because you know the fire service, man. You hear
Sure.
rumor and it spreads like wildfire. And by the time it started with this person, it gets to the end of this person, there's like 50 other things added into it. And it's like we can't do that. When somebody actually has an issue, we need to keep that. If they're like, hey man, like can you kind of keep it confidential to yourself, but find somebody that can help that
100%,
individual.
man. This is not anybody else's business, you know. And if you notice something, that's not kitchen table talk, you know. It's you know, it's between you and that person, you know, or you know, if you bring somebody else in that you know will be confidential, you know, but that needs to stay between you. And anything you're told stays between you. That's not anybody else's business, you know. And that's, you know, 100%. You know, on our peer support team, anything you tell us, you know, it's not getting advertised. I mean, the chiefs can come ask us about it, and I'm gonna be like,
We don't
I'm not talking about that. You know,
exactly.
we don't talk about that. You know, unless, man, heaven forbid, worst case scenario, they're wanting to hurt themselves. You know, then you got to intervene, you know, and get them the appropriate help. But yeah, I mean, you know, anybody could come ask me anything about a conversation I had with somebody, and it's they're not gonna know anything about it. You know, and you know, and I probably even, you know, try to, you know, play it off as nothing's even going on, you know, because people don't want that attention. And man, you are right, you know, by the time it gets to the end of the line, it's construed, and you know, and everybody hears about it, and what they end up hearing is usually not anywhere close to what the reality is. So confidentiality is huge, you know, because people don't want their business advertised, you know, they're not happy they're going through it anyway. They don't need, they don't need 30 different opinions, you know. They don't need, you know, and if they want to share their stuff with them, you know, that's up to them. But what they need is some focused attention and and going from there, and broaden it out from there.
100%, 100%. My last question that I always like to ask the guests, and I always have to preface, this is not a boasting or, hey, look what I'm trying to do. This is a genuine, because I truly believe everybody that comes in the fire service has aspirations and goals. So with that being said, before you see yourself retiring, hanging up that coat, putting that helmet, on the shelf for the last time, where would you like to see yourself within the fire service?
Are you asking like how I'd like to be seen? How like
Like at what rank do you want to
oh
stay at your rank before you
yeah
retire, or?
unless things change, I am totally good retiring as an officer, a company officer. I mean, if something opened itself up and I felt like I might be good for the position, I wouldn't rule anything out. But honestly, my plans are is to retire and to continue to work at the college, and work with the younger generation. This job has a shelf life, man. By the time I retire, I'm looking, I'm looking at 10 more years, 11 more years, and it's like, I'm not, I'll be 55, 56 years old, man. I'm not going to keep right. It's going to be time to kind of start getting off the rig, and letting somebody else take that spot, because we can only do it for so long, as long, much as I'd like to think, my mind may think I can do it till I'm 70, but my body's telling me, no, thank you.
Sir.
I definitely don't want to be a liability. I want to continue to be an asset. So, yeah, I plan on going to the college. The college is one of the most rewarding things I've ever done. I went actually where I go. I went to EMT and paramedic school there. We started the fire program 10 years ago, and my boss, who he's a battalion chief from Flower Mound, but we worked together part time. And he taught me in paramedic school and EMT school. We worked out in Argyle together, and he came to me and he's like, hey, we're gonna start this program. Do you want to be a part of it? And man, is the best, thing that I've ever been a part of, because it's more rewarding than anything I've ever seen. These kids come in so green, not knowing anything, as individuals, and leaving as a team, and watching them, flourish and get jobs. And we've got, I can't tell you how many of our adjunct instructors are former students, they come back through. So, man, the college is something I'll do. So honestly, right now my retirement plan is, retire from the fire department, continue to work at the college, and then eventually totally retire, man. I don't want to work till I'm, 80 years old. And, I want to be involved. I know it'll be hard to step away, but, I actually do want to enjoy being retired, and just doing whatever I want to do. But that's kind of my game plan. I feel like what we're doing at NCTC is special. Fire academies get a knock, and a lot of the times, but man, we got a bunch of pipe hitters and guys that really care. And we teach the IFSA stuff, yes, but then we teach real fire ground stuff. I mean, we mask up with gloves on. We do the nozzle forward. Yes, we're gonna do the skill of a two-person 24-foot IFSA throw, and then it's a single-person throw all day long. It's something unique to me. It doesn't feel like a job. It's not something I have to do. It's something I get to do. It's a privilege to be a small part of these cadets' journeys. And honestly, it is probably one of the most rewarding things I've ever done. So I can fully see myself just doing the college, after I retire, and being totally content retiring as a company officer.
Yeah, I love it. Love the answer. And I can't fault you for it. Like I said, that's why I always like to ask the guests what their aspirations are.
Yeah.
Rob, I really appreciate you coming on, man. A lot of people don't want to be vulnerable. They don't want to show their flaws, state their trials and tribulations. I think it takes a very special individual to put themselves out there, because it's very easy for somebody here. They'd be like, hey, did you hear about Rob? Oh yeah, like, oh my God, I can't believe he had that issue in this day and age, man. So I think we need more people like you, and there are more people like you that are coming out talking about their experiences, trying to pass on to the next person in line of like, hey, yes, this job is the greatest in the world, but you need to it you won't be able to really enjoy it unless you're one with yourself. Like you have to put yourself first. And I get it. I'm still trying to remember that and learn that as well as I get older in life, that I want to be good at the job, but I need to remember I also have priorities first, you know, and it's our job. We want to be good at it. Well, hopefully most of us want to be good at it. But like you stated earlier, I don't want to be those hope and luck individuals.
No.
But the thing is, we have them. We need to know that we have those individuals out there. And so my challenge to that is, I want to kind of make up the difference. And I know, you know, the fire ground or a fire department, it's not a one-man show, but I always want to be counted on where, like, hey, this person can do the job.
Man, I couldn't agree with more with everything you said. Like I was kind of mentioned earlier, I want to be an asset and not a liability. I want to be the guy that can be counted on, and when they need something done, that they come to me. And I want other people to be like that too. But that's just me personally. I want to be a go-to guy. And one that you can count on. And as man, as far as being vulnerable, it's like a man, like I said, I share my stuff so that in hopes that others hear it, and maybe I'm just a very transparent individual. What you see is kind of what you get, and I am who I am, and I want other people to be who they are and not ashamed of it, and so it's been a great journey. I couldn't imagine doing anything else. It's, the best job in the world. Got the best friends in the world, the best experiences. It's afforded me a spectacular life, we get to do stuff, we get to do things and be a part of something that, most people would kill for, it's a great thing. And man, I never lose sight of that. And I appreciate you having me on, man. I was, not gonna lie, a little nervous. Never really done anything like this, but I love talking shop, man. And you and your guests, we're all on the same page doing it for the same reasons. And man, just humbled and grateful. And I really appreciate it.
No, I mean, you're welcome. I truly appreciate everyone that I invite that accepts it, because I think we're all in this together. But what I love hearing is everybody has a different perspective, a different way of thinking that they bring to the game that can help change someone's outlook. Because I think from all the guests that I've had on here, there's somebody out there listening that can relate to at least one of them,
Sure.
like, oh yeah, this has happened in my department, or this has happened within my life. And so I'm just trying to spread that positivity of letting people know the fire service is the greatest thing in the world to us, to me. But we also need to remember our priorities, and that can so easily be overshadowed by us trying to be better at the job than most.
Yeah, no, man. And appreciate you doing your podcast. Like the fire service needs podcasts like what you have, and spreading the word and giving the people opportunities to share their experiences, man. And I love it. I think it's a regular listener, and I think it's great. It's just it's like-minded individuals, that we can all relate to, man. And I think it's great what you're doing, and man, keep it up, because people need to hear it.
I appreciate it. And I appreciate you for coming on. Truly do. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused. Stay committed and stay safe.